Groove 107.7 FM, you're with P Honey, and you're listening to Louis Jordan with Downtime. I've got Will Watterson from the Global Poverty Project online. And Will is the founder of Live Below the Line in New Zealand. So welcome, Will.
Kia ora, Pam. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. How are you?
I'm doing okay. I started the challenge early myself, so I'm a little bit hungry.
I can imagine. And I understand that today is your last night?
That's right. So I wanted to take the challenge early to sort of get a little bit of experience of what it was like and be able to share that with people this week. Most New Zealanders are taking it this week.
Yeah. And I'm one of them, and so is Dean, the station manager. So
fantastic.
It certainly has been, today, our first day, has been an experience. And so is this the first time you've done it, or did you do it last? Because did it start in New Zealand last year?
That's right. We put it to New Zealand last year for the first time. It was pretty low-key. Most of the actual challenge week I coordinated from my bedroom. And we were just shocked to see it raise $120,000.
That's amazing.
Five amazing charities last year, yeah. So this year, we certainly upped our game.
Yes, and there are more than five charities, I understand.
That's right. There are eight charities involved. This year you'll see big household names, you know, like World Vision, Oxfam, mm-hmm. UNICEF, VSA right alongside some smaller groups as well, like the Petrie Foundation, which is a youth-led organization, mm-hmm. quite young as well. And so really it's about providing, I suppose, a little bit of a smorgasbord of charities that are doing amazing anti-poverty work so that New Zealanders can learn a bit more about how it's tackled on both, well, I suppose, at the coalface, but also at the root causes of poverty too.
Now, I have been talking a little bit about what the challenge entails, but maybe you'd like to share a little bit of your insight with our listeners.
Sure. Yeah. We can never truly understand what it's like to live in extreme poverty unless we're actually in it ourselves for a decent amount of time. But I certainly think that empathy is the beginning of understanding and the beginning of action as well. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, we need to feel some kind of emotional connection with these issues, otherwise we don't necessarily do much about them, you know, out of sight, out of mind.
Yeah.
And the reality is that there are, you know, this is a generation where, you know, we've got iPads, we can fly people into space, it's amazing kind of what we're achieving in you know, these days, but at the same time, we have a world where 1.4 billion people live on less than $2.25 New Zealand a day, you know, for all their needs, you know, not just food, but, you know, medical care, education, all that stuff. So, you know, and these people are, you know, living in some foreign areas where, you know, they get terribly ill from drinking dirty water and they, you know, they have to walk 20 miles to get clean water or to get to, you know, or more to get to a clinic, so it's pretty extreme. But the reality is that, you know, we have the resources and the know-how to see an end to extreme poverty. We can safely say that, you know, this generation could see an end to this, which is amazing. You know, it's actually reduced in the last 30 years from over half the world's population to less than a quarter.
Wow.
So this campaign, yes, it's about getting a little bit of an insight into what it means to live in extreme poverty, but more than that, it's actually about celebrating. It's not necessarily about, you know, kind of the middle class liberal guilt or something like that. It's about celebrating the progress that's been made and saying, hey, let's join this movement. Let's be part of this movement that's trying to see an end to this thing within our lifetime.
Mm-hmm. And so you're saying in the last 30 years, poverty or extreme poverty has reduced. Is that right?
That's right, yeah. Drastically from 52% in 1983 of the world's population.
Mm-hmm.
This year, the latest measurement was taken by the World Bank. It's down to 22%. You know, so that's a significant drop.
How is that measured?
So that is a measure that's primarily done by the World Bank.
Right.
They're the ones that have this, you know, this extreme poverty line.
Mm-hmm.
And this is extreme poverty. You know, it's there's still an awful lot more people living in various forms of poverty, but this is abject poverty. This is poverty that kills, you know, poverty where people live. They go to bed hungry every night. Their growth as children especially is severely stunted from malnutrition.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking about kids dying from the lack of a an immunization or lack of access to clean water. So, mm-hmm. you know, really awful situation.
Right. Yeah. So we're talking about the extreme end of...
That's it. We're not talking about getting the whole world cars or flat-screen TVs. We are talking about, you know, how many people have access to clean water, how many people have a roof over their head, access to nutritious food, that kind of stuff. Mm. People's basic needs that they need to have met, you know, in order to take opportunities in life and to self-determine their lives.
Mm. And you talk about how taking part in this challenge, or even just talking about people's experience in this challenge, will increase empathy towards that situation. But how will that then, what do you see happening with that in terms of what action could it lead to, or what would you like to see? You know,
I don't think for a second that a fundraising campaign is going to end extreme poverty.
Yeah,
you know, it's a drop in the ocean. It's a very valuable drop.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you look at, you know, $1 to World Vision buys $6 worth of food aid, or, you know, the dollar to E3 mm-hmm. gets doubled. You know, every one of these partners can leverage amazing change from the money we put in.
Okay.
But, you know, to end extreme poverty, we're going to need to look at the bigger issues, and that's things like trade justice, tax justice, corruption,
mm-hmm.
these kind of things. And, you know, economic growth in a lot of these countries.
Right.
And also, it's about, there's a lot of political issues as well. We're talking about gender empowerment,
mm-hmm.
Getting girls into school, women having equal rights in these countries,
right.
and being able to engage with the political system. So, you know, whilst I don't think a fundraiser will end extreme poverty, I do think a movement will.
Okay.
And I think this is one step towards movement. You know, it's about having conversations that matter.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I would love to see New Zealanders become global citizens.
Yep.
You know, active global citizens, aware of these issues, but also taking action. You know, when we read the newspaper in the morning, we see extreme poverty, we see climate change, we see biodiversity loss. We don't just leave the house and talk about it at a cafe or a pub, that we actually take action. So we at the Global Poverty Project, who created this campaign, we're working on an app called Global Citizen, which will allow New Zealanders to take action on these issues, the bigger systemic issues,
mm-hmm.
using a smartphone app and all these other things. So we're trying to use social media and the way that people connect it. I'm really excited, particularly about how social media has the power to connect people globally and make a huge difference.
Mm. That's fantastic, because this interview is being broadcast to many of our listeners in places like Germany and Mexico and...
Oh,
Japan, which is really exciting for us from a radio perspective, but also to help spread good news stories. Fantastic.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
You know, because I think the common perception of a lot of these countries, when we think of a poorer country,
mm-hmm.
you know, these countries are often incredibly wealthy in the sense of resources, mm-hmm. Whether it be mineral wealth, natural wealth, whether it be the fact that they probably have a huge comparative advantage in certain, whether it might be manufacturing or agriculture or something like that, and they're often locked out of the benefits of that, either from due to corruption or, you know, they don't get the deals they should.
Right.
They're locked out of the benefits of, say, effective mineral extraction, you know, diamonds, oil or whatever, or even just look at the agricultural side, like a country like Kenya that could be making a lot of money from dairy, but mm-hmm. is locked out of that market due to the subsidies in Europe. So, really, those the better terms of trade and political changes, I think, in these countries will see a huge change. And that's about doing what we can to change, you know, the laws and policies on our side of things. But also, it's about getting behind these amazing leaders in these countries who are fighting for change as well.
So that's how everyday New Zealanders can get involved?
That's right. So, I mean, it's not just about donating. I mean, any of the partners who run campaigns, campaigns make a huge change. I mean, often when we think of our donation, we like the idea of, you know, of our money going directly to buying, you know, mosquito nets or digging a well or something like that. And fair enough. But when you actually look at what campaigns achieve, and when I mean a campaign, I mean, you know, a guided movement to achieve a certain political or financial outcome. Look at, for instance, the Jubilee Debt Campaign around the year 2000. You know, that campaign was led by, you know, some of the bigger NGOs and lots and lots of volunteers. It kind of was connected to the Make Poverty History campaign. And because of that, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars of debt of developing country, third world debt, was written off. You know, that's an amazing achievement. That's a huge amount of money. You know, that's literally hundreds of years of New Zealand's, the money we give as a government, as a country to aid, that's hundreds of years of what we give. You know, it's a huge difference. And it really lets, certainly some of the poorest countries in the world up to that point were paying, you know, sometimes over half their GDP on debt repayment to the rich world. So campaigns can achieve a huge amount. And so I'd really encourage New Zealanders not just to give money to these great organizations, but to check out their campaigns. For instance, Oxfam's Grow campaign, which is focused on food justice at the moment. Check that out, you know, get yourself schooled up on that kind of thing. We'll also, the Global Poverty Project will be running a lot of campaigns in the years to come around health, around tax justice and around corruption. So follow us as well.
That's fantastic. Sounds like it's going to be a busy, well, a busy generation, I guess, to try you know,
it's an exciting generation to be alive. I really believe that. You know, you look in the paper, you see doom and gloom a lot, but part of that is because there is so much more information available now, and we are so much more connected. And I think this is a generation, I'm especially encouraged by the kids that I talk to, young people and children, because it's just, you know, it's black and white for them. It's like, we need to tackle climate change. You know, we can't let abject poverty remain on, you know, on the surface. These issues kind of just a no-brainer. I just love that. And to see, you know, I think the future will be a wonderful hodgepodge of governments working on these problems, individuals, social enterprises, and just diverse communities connected around the world through the internet, through social media, and through working practically together.
Fantastic. It is an exciting, it's an exciting thing to be involved with, and I'm really pleased that I've been able to take part this year.
We're stoked that you're part of it.
Yeah, thank you.
Hi, Will. Fabulous work you do. And did we talk about the fact, I know I've seen online, a few people have asked, obviously we're saying $2.25 a day, and that's all you can spend on food. And obviously for people, you know, who don't have the choice to spend more than that, they're not only paying for food, they're paying for medical bills, electricity, anything else in their life for that, in that $2.25. But I've seen some people who say, well, $2.25 New Zealand over there, wherever there is quite a bit more money. So I think we need to make it clear that it's what you can buy for $2.25 in New Zealand, the buying power of $2.25 in New Zealand. So
that's
It's been calculated.
Anyone, and it is a bit of a convoluted process to calculate, but anyone who's done economics will be familiar with the term purchasing power parity. But you're absolutely right, it's about buying power, not about conversions, not about international currency conversions. So it's about what basket of goods or resources you would have access to in New Zealand at $2.25 a day. So just try and imagine living on that amount per day for all your needs, including housing, medical, everything. That's what it would feel like to live in extreme poverty globally.
Yeah. And for us, you know, we've just nearly getting through our first day of it, but it does take some thinking, and I'm already craving a nice piece of cake or something, but that's going to be out of the question at the moment. So that didn't take long.
It's tricky, isn't it? And you just start to notice these things. I mean, for those coffee lovers, I know I'm one, the caffeine withdrawal and the, you know, little, you know, food isn't just there to sustain us. It's also something to be enjoyed and that we use to sort of to go with certain moods, you know, coffee in the morning, glass of wine at night, this kind of thing, sugar.
Yeah. And so for these people, they don't get that option to eat food for pleasure probably very much.
You know, an awful amount of time and preparation that goes into cooking, you know, sourcing the food and cooking it and storing it and making sure, you know, it's there when you need it. And heaven forbid that you burn your rice or your lentils, because then you'd be hungry for the whole day.
Mm.
I had to my soup. I had to...
What?
I wasn't going to go there.
Say
I
that again.
Knew where shoes had been, so I just had to pour it away. It was heartbreaking.
Was that for a laugh, or...?
No, he's just five. He's just messing around, and his shoe went in my soup.
Oh, no.
Just quickly, what sort of things have you been eating over... So just to reiterate... Will had a jump start on the rest of us. You're just finishing your week of Live Below the Line right now. What sort of things have you been eating?
A good friend of mine pointed out to me last year that, you know, what you often end up eating are peasant foods, and certainly perhaps the foods of your ancestors, like your great-great-grandparents or whatever. I thought this time, because I've got Irish blood, I thought I'd go the way of the potato.
Oh, that's interesting.
And, worked out quite well, because, you know, potatoes have more nutrition than you give them credit for.
They do.
And they're also very cheap. I found an Asian market in New Lynn, where I live, selling 10 kgs of potatoes for $4.
Wow.
Oh, set.
So I bought a lot of potatoes. So I've never been particularly hungry over the challenge, but I have been very bored. I made a bit of dal to go with that, and it's just a very dry combo, dry eating dal and dry potato with no butter for breakfast. It can get a bit old. So, but I managed to budget in 3 cups of tea a day with a spoonful of milk powder, and that has saved my bacon. It's really kind of relaxing and soothes the hunger, or soothes the kind of sugar craving, certainly.
Yeah, we've realised that porridge is actually quite cheap.
Yeah.
About 13 cents for a plate of porridge, and then depending on whether you have milk or not, and sugar.
And porridge is really good. It's quite high in protein as well, porridge.
Mm. Another underestimated food.
That's right. The Scottish.
Yeah.
Getting by in their oats and water and a bit of salt. And also, you know, if you look at rice, like a bowl of rice, you eat that, you're like, oh, even if it might fill your stomach, you might... There's a difference between being full and being satisfied. It's really interesting.
It is very interesting.
But then if you mix in just a tiny bit of, say, dal, or a tiny bit of eckar pickle or something like that, suddenly that stimulation from the salt and the spices makes you feel full. It's really interesting. One trick I did last year was just to get an apple a day, and you just, a way of making it go very slowly is to grate it in. So a bowl of porridge oats and just grate third of an apple into it and mix it through, and sweetens it up.
Sounds very, very tasty. Actually, anything sounds tasty at the moment.
Yeah, that's right.
I'll be looking forward to getting home and having my portion of rice and pumpkin.
Brilliant.
Well, thank you very much for sharing your experience and your thoughts and your vision for this challenge with us. Really appreciate your time.
And just really encourage anyone who's hearing this, it's not too late to sign up. We'll have the website up for the next 5 weeks, so if anyone's only just hearing about it, plenty of time to sign up.
Fantastic. That's good to know.
Yeah.
And big love to everyone who's taking it this week, including you guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We really appreciate it, and thank you for all your work.
Great. Awesome. Cool. Thanks, guys.
All right, you're welcome. So that was Will Watterson from Global Poverty Project talking to us about the Live Below the Line Challenge. We will have the interview online if you're interested in sharing that with anybody else who you think might be interested. You're on Groove 107.7 FM.